House Committee on Health and Human Services to order this May 11th, 2005. Should be a pretty brief agenda this morning. Everything should go pretty quickly. There are a couple of bills that are ready to be worked out. So with that, we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 189. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 189 comes over to this committee from the Senate Health Policy Committee. There's no revenue impact. It has a minimal fiscal impact statement. It modifies the circumstances under which the Department of Human Services may purchase or distribute vaccines containing thimerosal. Sorry.
Thimerosal.
You got it right. Thimerosal.
Thimerosal for the use in individuals under the age of 18. This comes to us from a Senate floor vote of 28 ayes, 1 no, and 1 excused.
Okay. Katie, bring your panel forward.
Did you grab the Senate? And there's no subsequent referral on this bill.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Paul Cieslak. I manage the Communicable Disease Program for the Department of Human Services. I don't have any prepared testimony, but I'm here to answer questions as needed.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lorraine Duncan. I'm the Immunization Program Manager for the Department of Human Services, and I'm here to ask your support for Senate Bill 189. Two sessions ago, a bill around mercury thimerosal was passed, indicating that the Department of Human Services couldn't buy those vaccines unless there was no other vaccine available. And I think the assumption was made at that point that vaccines would either come with thimerosal or without thimerosal. But in fact, what actually happened around influenza vaccine is that the manufacturers came up with a number of different formulations which complicated the issue. So they had, and it changed every year. So they might have a vaccine for two-year-olds and a vaccine for three-year-olds and a vaccine for 4 to 6-year-olds and a vaccine for older age groups. Some had thimerosal and some didn't. So because the bill said that we had to buy vaccine with no thimerosal unless there was something else available, it forced us to buy three different formulations of flu vaccine for pediatricians. So giving each pediatrician three different formulations made them write three different standing orders and have to keep them completely separate and remember which vaccine went for which age groups. The complexity in immunizations is already very difficult in that we have over 20-some vaccines and they have to keep that straight, but to add three special ones for influenza made it very difficult. So some physicians told us they would prefer not to give influenza vaccine under those circumstances. The other thing that complicated it was the one that was available with no thimerosal only came in non-OSHA compliant needles, and some physicians had already implemented OSHA standards and were not willing to not go with OSHA standards. So it just presented a lot of complications. So what this bill does is allow us to have flexibility in regard to undue burden for providers. And it allows us to take this to the Immunization Policy Advisory Board and write into administrative rule how to handle it for each flu season, because it could change every 6 months, and it's been very difficult for folks. So I'm just here to ask for your support for Senate Bill 189, and we, Paul and I, would be happy to answer any of your questions.
Questions? Representative Greenlee.
Yeah, I just want to put on the record that thimerosal, this is an important issue, not a trivial issue. I'd like to ask a couple of questions. What does undue burden mean?
Undue burden is in regard to physicians having to have three formulations of the pediatric influenza vaccine and to keep it straight. It's very difficult to make sure that you've got that vaccine with the other 20 that they have and to make sure that they're giving it appropriately. It's just very complicated, and many of them didn't wish to do that. Many of them opted not to do flu vaccine in that instance. So that's what we called undue burden.
And you'll define undue burden in administrative sanction. Just that's too hard for them to keep them straight as an undue burden?
Yes, that's true.
And this is for any age? It could be given to... this mercury-containing vaccine could be given to kids whose brain were in active formulation, a young child under these rules?
Representative Greenlick, the influenza vaccine can be given as early as 6 months of age and then all the way up till you're 100 years old.
So we have no problem putting mercury in a vaccine that will be given to a six-month-old child?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greenlick, thanks for the question. There was a lot of speculation about potential dangers caused by mercury in vaccines. What I would argue is that if the choice comes down to should a child at 6 months of age even get an influenza vaccine, or should the influenza vaccine be foregone because of concern about thimerosal toxicity, I would argue that the risk is clearly greater to the child if he does not get the influenza vaccine. The basis for my conclusion is 6 well-designed epidemiologic studies that have been conducted since the first Institute of Medicine report that have looked at literally millions of children who have gotten a thimerosal-containing vaccine in the United States, Great Britain, Sweden, and Denmark, and have found no association with autism or other neurodevelopmental disorders among children receiving the thimerosal-containing vaccine. On the other hand, influenza kills 36,000 people in the United States every year. It's true that most of them are older folks, but infants actually have about as high a risk for getting hospitalized with influenza as the elderly do, and so influenza presents a real threat to infants, whereas the threat from thimerosal was theoretical and frankly has been laid to rest by the Institute of Medicine review of the published studies since its first report.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, I've read every one of those studies, and I'm a member of the Institute of Medicine, and I've reviewed the Institute of Medicine material. And what you're saying might be right if there was no flu vaccine with anything but trace elements of thimerosal. But that's not the risk. The risk is inconvenience in physicians against the possible harm of putting mercury into the system of six-month-old children. So how do you rate that risk, the risk of inconveniencing some physicians against the risk of...
Thanks for the question, Representative Greenlick. The fact of the matter is when they're facing these things, they don't give the vaccine. And our concern is to get children vaccinated against what we know is this real threat. We can tell them that they oughtn't be so inconvenienced by it, but we know that some of them stopped giving the vaccine. In this past year, I think our record suggests that we immunized roughly a quarter of the children in that 6 to 23-month group for whom the vaccination is recommended. And so we know it doesn't happen just empirically.
That's absolutely true. It is a dilemma, though, Paul. I mean, it really worries me when there are non-thimerosal vaccines available. Has the Academy of Pediatrics changed their position on thimerosal-containing vaccines?
As far as I know, the most recent statement is that they recommend that the thimerosal be gotten out of the vaccines, and I don't think they've gone into much more detail than that.
What's the availability of non-thimerosal-containing vaccines for kids?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think most of you remember that we had a severe flu vaccine shortage last year, and we're not sure exactly what the supply is going to be this year. Adventist, which is now called SOFI, is going to be producing 62 million doses of the vaccine. Most of that will be thimerosal-containing. They are making a new formulation, which would be perfect for us with no thimerosal, but the amount available is going to be just what they call nominal or minuscule. We're putting an order for that. It has not been confirmed. And I think that's true for many of the providers in the state of Oregon. Several of the other manufacturers are seeking licensure for their flu vaccine this year, and they're not sure whether they'll get it through FDA in time for the flu season. So the availability of any flu vaccine, in addition to the 62 million, is iffy, and we do need about 100 million doses in the United States to vaccinate the population from 6 months all the way through our seniors.
Further questions? Okay. Thanks very much. Committee standards for a second. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 189. Open a work session on 189. I believe this bill is ready to go. Do we have any amendments, Sandy?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do not.
Okay. Without amendments, I'd like a motion on Senate Bill 189, please.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 189 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 189 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Greenlee.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to go along with the bill. I agree with Dr. Cizek's statement that we need to get kids immunized, but I'd really like to put on the record that I'd urge in the rulemaking process that we do everything possible to produce, to get the vaccines to the kids that do not have thimerosal in them whenever possible. My doubts are still on the precautionary principle, which most epidemiologists and public health people take. Make sure you're doing no harm, first of all, and I'm not convinced there is no harm here in spite of the epidemiological reports. But getting kids vaccinated is really very, very important. And, I'll be voting yes on this and on the floor.
Other comments?
Yeah, I will second what Representative Greenlee just said. I have the same concerns and would encourage, I mean, I always see these medications advertised as thimerosal free, and as if that's a better thing to be. So, if you know, however, we can encourage more to be produced without it for that choice to be made. Oh. But I'll be a yes on it, too, for the immunization package.
Other discussion? I guess I would just like to say on the record that Section 1, Sub 3, no other vaccine for the same purpose is commercially available in a form that does not cause an undue burden on immunization providers, as Representative Greenlee pointed out, is not language that it is the kind of language that I'd like to see. So I hope that the department will, being as we're about to probably pass this into law, that the department would tighten up on administrative rule that language of what constitutes an undue burden. So, with that, with no further discussion, Representative Anderson, we are on Senate Bill 189. This is a Senate bill that passed the Senate 28-1. We're in work session. We're prepared to move the bill out.
Under the bill.
Okay. Seeing no objection, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative
Boone. Aye.
Representative
Cameron. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Chair votes aye. Representative Butler is excused. And would you read Representative Butler's name before you read mine, please? Senate Bill 189, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. This one is going to need a carrier.
I'd be happy to carry that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei will carry the bill. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 189 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 225.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 225 is modifying the scope of the immunization registry maintained by the Department of Human Services, modifies the requirements for the documentation of the immunizations necessary for attendance at educational institutions in Oregon. We had previous public hearing on this bill and received testimony on February 21st. At that time, we reviewed the current immunization process and procedures, the current status of some communicable disease statistics, foreign students, process and procedures, and at that time there was some discussion about a proposed amendment. You should have the dash threes, and for the committee's information, I hand enclosed the bill, but I left the copies someplace and I can't recall where. So I was hoping this would be a little later so I could sneak out and make more copies, but and I believe the dash three amendments came from Representative Greenlee. Is that clear?
I don't know where we are here.
I think
I don't have dash threes.
They'll be in your packet
at
the meeting
one.
Today.
And I believe it's behind your SMS in your packet.
What does SMS stand for?
Staff Measures Summary.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I can begin with
just a light review of the amendment on Hand and Gross.
Well, let's ask who forwarded this amendment, do we know?
It was from the discussion that we had at the first meeting, and the department worked with the representative and crafted some language that was acceptable.
Are we talking, which bill are we talking
about? Senate Bill 225.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong bill. Yes, I did, and if I can find it. I'm sorry. I did draft these amendments. I do know what we're talking about. I have the right file in front of me. The amendments do two major things. One that Representative Butler was concerned about, and one that I was concerned about. And incidentally, I believe we should pass these out as amended and pass on the floor. The health group has a couple of wording things that we just didn't have time to get in here that I agree with, and I'll put on the record, I hope that they can happen on the Senate side. I don't think they're critical.
This is the Senate bill that has come over, so this will be
line. I'm sorry. I think we should go with them in this form. And maybe Lorraine can talk about them, and we can see what's happening, but I think they're wording that's minor. And it would be good to put on the record that we're not trying to do what she thinks we're not trying to do with this. The first section, the page 3, the deletions.
Can I stop you for a second?
I'm sorry,
that's okay. We did ask you to run us through the amendments, but it's been 3 months since we've heard this bill for the first time, so maybe we should start with the bill. So I'll call forward Paul, Dr. Flack, Lorraine Duncan. Again, I see you signed up on this bill. Run us through this bill again where we are, and then Representative Greenlee can show us how the DASH 2 amendments fit in.
I can get awake and come to some semblance of rationality.
Okay, if you need to. I thought you were doing just fine.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Need you to state your name again for the record, please.
Once again, for the record, I'm Dr. Paul Cieslak. I manage the communicable disease section for the Department of Human Services.
I'm Lorraine Duncan, Immunization Program Manager, Department of Human Services.
Okay. So bring us up to speed on this bill, please.
I would be happy to. This bill was originally introduced by the Department of Human Services, and it was a conglomerate of a number of different ideas. One was to expand our statewide immunization registry to start including access to authorized resources like colleges. And the other thing in regard to alert was the possibility of just more expansion into the adult arena. We understand that the committee, several of the members on the committee are opposed to that action, and that's not included in the DASH 3 amendments, and we can live with that. Okay. So anything in reference to the statewide registry has been deleted from the bill. One of the other clauses in the bill related to kind of some technical terms around the school immunization in regard to the no record exclusion order. Schools wanted the health departments to go back to writing the no record exclusion orders and enforcing that once a year rather than the schools doing it on a 30-day rotating cycle. That's still included in the DASH 3 amendments, and we're hoping that you would approve that part of the bill. We're interested in having international students have two doses of measles before they start, was the initial intent of the bill. Representative Greenlee has widened that and said the department may require all vaccines as required for the K-12, and those could be done by administrative rule, and we are happy with that. That works fine for us. So the amendments in DASH 3 are significantly different than we started out with. We had really hoped to expand the registry and do expansion to colleges for our statewide registry, but we understand that's not the will of the committee, and we can live with that. So be happy to answer any of your questions.
So, Representative Greenlee?
And there were a couple of words that were troubling me, Lorraine. I think it would be good to put on the record that we're not doing that.
Sure.
Words that were bothering you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there was two slight wording changes that we had requested. One, when the bill was originally done, it talked about measles vaccine, and then it talked about all college students born on or after 1/1/57. That particular reference to 1/1/57 only applies to measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, and it's because students born before that time are considered to be immune, but it doesn't apply to diphtheria, tetanus, containing vaccine, or any of the other new vaccines. So since the wording has been expanded, it was just an inadvertent error, I think, where it still got included in there, and it would be helpful not to have it in there because it doesn't apply to any other vaccine except measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine. The other thing that happened after the bill was drafted, the College Health Association made it clear to us that maybe a better word for international students that we wanted to target for this population, instead of saying international students on a student visa, they wanted us to call it international students on a non-immigrant visa. Evidently, immigrants coming into this into the United States are already required to have vaccines, but so it's the non-immigrant visas that they're worried about. And they felt that that would better identify the target population. This was all came about because of a measles outbreak at Oregon State University a couple of years ago, which caused a lot of work by the local county health department and by the university, and they're wanting to make sure that international students who don't have their measles vaccine have it before they actually start into the classes at the college level. Be happy to answer any other questions about that.
Thank you.
So we're and you didn't get that language in the Dash 3 amendments, the non-immigrant visa? Is that what it is?
No,
it's line 2 on page
visa.
2?
Yeah.
Student visa?
Right.
Can we just change it right now?
I'm perfectly fine with it. It makes a lot of sense to me. LC told me that those sort of things are okay. Sandy's gotten beaten over the head.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm not.
The staff,
as I was rearranging my office before session, looping over and over and over was Greg Chamov saying that conceptual amendments were verboten. So
I had some discussion about this with them. They were reluctant to go on the record because they've been really beating up the committee staff about it.
Right.
Hopefully they're listening.
Yeah, I mean, I would say if it's okay with them, let's do it that way, and if it's not, then let's go with it as it is. So.
Well, I tell you what we'll do is I'd like to move this bill out. Let's sort of recess this public hearing. Let's get legislative council on the phone before we do that.
See if they'll let us do that.
We can plug it in,
good.
And then we'll come back to it. All right? So we're still in a public hearing, actually. So is there any other questions or comments on this bill before we adjourn the public hearing?
I just wanted to admit, to make clear, the first eight lines of the dash threes, lines 2 through 8 do what Representative Butler wanted to do, and his office has seen them, and they have no problem. And the Section 4 doesn't require the state to do anything or the schools to do anything. It just gives them authorization to make the rules that that they need. And I think we have agreement on
that. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, Mr. Fitzwater, you are signed up to testify. Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Bruce Fitzwater. I'm from Portland, and I represent the Christian Science Churches in Oregon. Good morning. Thank you, Representative Baldo, Chairman.
The only
I just received the Dash 3 amendments. I have called the administrative office and asked them what was proceeding on this, and they told me they would keep me informed, and I hadn't seen them until I walked in here. So I'm behind the ball on this.
Maybe I could offer a suggestion then. While they're checking with the legislative council, we can bring this bill up last. Maybe you can take a few moments to review.
Well, do I understand that pages 3, 1 through 34, so the issues that I was concerned on have been actually dropped from the bill, and then if that's the case, as I understand it now, then I have no more to say. I thank you for...
Yeah, this does not expand it beyond 18. Does not define it.
Yeah. So as long as we're keeping the present protections in, then we're very pleased.
Well, I tell you, I'll give you an opportunity again if, you know, you want to add something.
Thank you.
In the next few minutes here, review the bill.
Thank you.
About a half an hour or so.
Fine.
And then you're welcome to come back up. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman.
All right. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 225 and go to a work session on House Bill 3443. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3443 creates the 211 statewide telephone number for access to health and human services and other pertinent services after an emergency. It directs the Office of Emergency Management to establish the 211 system and the system's criteria. It what you have before you, hopefully in your file, is during the public hearing that we had on April 13th, we received a -1 amendment. That amendment is still applicable. It's not a complete replaces the bill, but it's pretty substantial. But what this amendment is doing is it takes out the appropriations from the general fund and allows the Office of Emergency Management to accept and any federal or other source monies, and that the Office of Emergency Management can then provide grants to 211 providers. This still has an emergency clause. At the public hearing, it was requested of the committee to rescind the Ways and Means referral. We have gotten approval to do that since there is no fiscal impact on this bill. And we have folks here, proponents of the bill, that are here to answer any other questions that you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sandy. So, Ellen, we're ready to go. Could you, could you walk us through the -1 amendments?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the -1 amendments were presented at our previous hearing, and really what it does is establish a vehicle for the state of Oregon, if indeed the federal government and the wisdom of their Congress does choose to allocate some millions of dollars to 211, that those can be received by Oregon. And as you heard at the initial hearing, there is a vehicle called Oregon 211, which is in operation and is ready to receive these dollars and facilitate communication. I'd be happy to respond to any questions. Lisa Wendt, who has been one of the key facilitators in putting together the program in the Portland metropolitan area, is here with me, and we could respond.
Can I ask you to just state your name for the record?
I'm sorry. Ellen Rowe, Public Policy Counsel, United Way of the Columbia, Willamette.
Okay. Thank you. Questions or comments? No other amendments besides the -1?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I don't think we have any questions or comments. Lucille, did you have something to add?
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I think we're ready to go. So I will accept a motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I move -1 amendment to House Bill 3443.
We haven't adopted those yet.
No.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves the -1 amendments to House Bill 3443. Is there any discussion? Objection. Seeing no objection, the amendments are ordered adopted. Representative May.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3443 is amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Good job. Representative Tomei moves House Bill 3443 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Discussion. Objection. Clerk, call roll.
Aye.
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 President Butler excused.
Chair Dalto.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 3443, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Who, how about March?
Yeah, whose name is on this bill?
March?
Yeah. Okay, we'll attach Representative March as the carrier of this bill. With that, we will close the work session, House Bill 3443. And we'll go back down. Colleagues, we started out of order only because I was the only person here first, and then Representative Greenlake, and so we needed to buy some time. But with that, we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 97.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Again, Senate Bill 97 had a public hearing on February 28th. This is authorizing the State Board of Massage Therapists to establish an expiration date of licensees by administrative rule. We spoke to the current process of their rulemaking. The other topic discussed was the concept of going to biennial licensing. And that's been a concept that some of the regulatory boards have been considering. There are no amendments to this bill. There's no revenue or fiscal impact on the bill. This left the Senate floor 25 ayes, no votes, 5 excused. If the committee has any questions, we have Patrick Allen of the Regulatory Office of Streamlining is in the audience to address the committee if they so desire.
Okay, Patrick, come forward for a second. Good morning, welcome.
Thank you.
Are we ready to go on Senate Bill 97?
Yes, sir.
All right. Questions? That's it. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 97 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 97 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Objection.
Meow.
Meow. I'm sorry?
I'm just referring to herding cats.
Sorry, Representative. You can lead
her off by getting making Representative Cameron richer.
No, actually, Representative Green, like, you're just helping him raise enough money to pay for the health insurance.
Oh, good.
That's the perspective that I like to view it under. Clerk, will call the roll, please.
Aye.
President Boone?
Aye.
President Cameron?
Aye.
President Greenlee?
Aye.
President
Tomei?
Aye.
President Butler?
Representative Butler excused.
Senator Alto?
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 97, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Consent calendar. Yes, Representative Tomei.
I move that Senate Bill 97 be on the consent calendar.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves that Senate Bill 97 be placed on a consent calendar. Is there any objection? With no objection, Senate Bill 97 is ordered placed on a consent calendar. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 97 and open a work session, actually a public hearing. No, we did have a work session, a public hearing on 104, right?
Mr. Chair, we did, and we do have folks here. You so choose to open up.
Are they signed up? Okay, we'll have a public hearing on Senate Bill 104. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 104 again comes from the Senate Committee on Health Policy. It left the Senate floor with 22 aye votes, no votes, and 8 excused. This modifies the requirements for the Board of Radiologic Technology licensure process, establishes requirements for the operation of computed tomography equipment, and it authorizes the board to approve courses that meet the continuing education requirements for the licensees. There is no fiscal or revenue impact on this bill, no subsequent referral, and at this time we have no amendments.
Okay, Ms. Russell, Mr. King, we heard this bill 3 months ago almost, so could you refresh our memory on the bill?
Good morning, Chair Dalton, members of the committee. We're pleased to be here today. Senate Bill 104 does a couple of things. It will actually remove some of the outdated language that we have in our statutes concerning the references to the American Registry of Radiologic Technology. In its place, we're actually going to state that, for instance, a radiologic technologist like Mr. King be certified by the American Registry of Radiologic Technology. And the passage that we're deleting goes into really what makes up the American Registry. It is the only national board of certification for our radiologic technologists. And so that was the board's attempt at kind of streamlining things to make the statutes read a little bit better. What it will also do is technologies are rapidly changing, and right now we have a piece of equipment that is a hybrid, and it's CT and nuclear medicine. Yeah, and I'm going to ask Thomas to speak to any of the technical part of this. But it's currently operated by a CT radiologic technologist and a nuclear medicine technologist. And what we'd like to be able to do is change the language so that it would allow this equipment to be used by one person. Currently, Oregon Health Sciences University is working with PCC, which is one of our schools for radiologic technologists, to come up with a program that would be able to certify these individuals so that they were qualified to use the equipment. It's kind of a new area, and so this is kind of a start. We've been working with Radiation Protection Services, and they have similar language that they've just put into administrative rule. And so this is our attempt at trying to move forward technologies, because it seems like they're changing so rapidly before it's time for us to come up for a next biennium session to bring things forward to you. And so this is what this bill does. And the one other change is that commuted tomography is no longer called computerized tomography, so we'd like to change it to computed. And then one other part of the language housekeeping bill is our continuing education. Currently it says that the board will offer continuing education. What we really do is approve continuing education for all of our renewals, and so we'd like to change that language. And basically that's what it does.
All right. Are there any amendments? It's ready to go in spirit, present form. Okay. Thanks very much. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 225. Open a work session. Oh, I'm sorry. On 104. And open a work session on Senate Bill 104. Representative Tomei?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 104 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Clerk will call the roll, please.
President Anderson?
Aye.
President Boone?
Aye.
President Cameron?
Votes aye.
President
Greenwich?
Aye.
President Tomei?
Aye.
President Butler?
Excused.
Chair Dalton?
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 104, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Motion for the consent calendar, please.
So move, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 104 be ordered placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Senate Bill 104 is ordered placed on the consent calendar. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 104. Is there anybody here on Senate Bill 285?
Mr. Chair, I believe no, there is not.
We haven't had a public hearing.
No, Mr. Chair, we have not. This was the first time we discussed it.
All right. Well, committee will stand at ease for just a moment. So it sounds like on Senate Bill 225 that we are going to have another set of amendments drafted that will make the changes that were discussed, and we will bring this bill up on Friday after 9:30, which will give us enough time to post the notice. Actually, we can just carry.
And you've announced it, so all of the pertinent people are here. So.
Yeah. So 9:30 okay. Or whatever, we'll pass it out on Friday. So sorry, we have
take that. You also want to take out that birth date,
right?
Well, is that right?
Since yeah, we have that.
I have.
Great.
I will submit that.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 285. Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is the bill that requires the Department of Human Services to listen and hear from acupuncturists and pharmacists prior to making appointments to the Pain Management Commission. Mr. Kefouri, we were, I swear, 10 seconds away from kissing this bill goodbye, but you are here, so welcome. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I apologize for being late this morning. I had a carpool trying to be environmentally sound, and some of the people weren't ready.
Ouch. That's
so
like a major
I just
faux pas,
got here and came right in. My name is Stephen Kefouri. I represent the Oregon Agricultural Association. I don't know how much this committee has heard about the Pain Management Commission. It's a commission that was founded by Senator Joan Dukes a number of years ago, partially in response to the death with dignity issues that we've been, this legislature in the state's been dealing with. And as that issue came about, it was there was a lot of concern in the medical profession, in the healthcare profession generally, that there wasn't enough care being given to what happens with people who are in long-term chronic pain, and especially the pain with people who are dying, but all kinds of long-term pain. And there's a thought that if we had some interdisciplinary organization that could get people from different backgrounds, different training, different philosophies about how to treat pain, and coordinate those, that they could share information with practitioners who deal with people in pain. That being said, if you look at the way most commissions are structured, the statute designates a position. There will be one of these persons, there will be one pharmacist, there will be one social worker, there will be one mental health worker, there will be one MD. For some strange reason, and I wasn't around at the beginning of this, this commission wasn't structured that way. It just says that when people are appointed, those organizations will be are required to be asked for members who might be appointed to the commission. So there's a long list of different kinds of practitioners, not the people who are going to be on, but the people who need to be asked who should be on. It's important to have acupuncturists on this because the acupuncture profession has been very, very involved in pain management back since, as you may recall, when Nixon went to China and came back, and some of the reporters went along with him, saw some operations that were being conducted in China by people who, without Western anesthetics, and they were opening people up, operating on them, using only acupuncture as a technique. And this was the first time that Americans really had heard much about acupuncture. It started a process of expansion, which to where now we have a school of acupuncture in the state of Oregon and producing increasing numbers of practitioners on a daily basis, and a lot of people are getting treatment and care that they wouldn't have gotten in the past. So all in all, it's a good thing. Acupuncturists do very good pain management, and there's been some extremely satisfying, to our point of view, studies recently, especially on things like arthritis, where you've seen all the problems with pharmaceuticals. Recently, people getting dying from taking long-term Celebrex or whatever. And the nice thing about acupuncture, it has no side effects. It doesn't work in all cases and doesn't work for all people, but the studies have shown that it is very efficacious for pain management. And the reason we want to have somebody on the commission is that we think it's important when this commission is disseminating information that someone be there who can talk about acupuncture. For example, they just produced a slideshow, a PowerPoint presentation that various different practitioners, healthcare practitioners, are required to see. The laws now for a lot of different healthcare practitioners require in their continuing professional education that they have an hour, a half an hour, whatever, a year of pain management. Information, education, and this is the Pain Management Commission is putting this together. And then the slideshow, at first they had nothing at all about acupuncture, and then we pushed and pushed and pushed and finally got one slide. We think that would have been a much easier process had we been able to be on the commission, as I said before. This doesn't put us there, but it puts us into the category of being eligible. We were required to be required that we are asked for recommendations. The bill also puts in pharmacists in this list. I don't know where that came from. It did not come from us, whether it came from the Pharmacy Association, whether it came from the Pain Commission. I have no idea. It seems to me a good idea, as they are also very involved in dealing with pain. So that's my testimony, Mr.
Okay. All right. questions or comments? Thank you very much.
With
that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 285, open a work session on Senate Bill 285. Representative Tomei.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 285 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Tomei. Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 285 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Clerk will call the roll, please.
President Anderson?
Aye.
President
Byrne?
Aye.
President
Cameron?
Aye.
President Greenwood?
Aye.
President Tomei?
Aye.
President Butler?
Excused.
Chair Dalton?
Chair votes aye. Senate Bill 285, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Tomei, would you like to carry this? Or does somebody? Consent calendar? Okay. Representative Tomei moves that Senate Bill 285 be ordered placed on a consent calendar. Is there any objection? Without objection, Senate Bill 285 is placed on a consent calendar. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 285. Seeing no other business coming before the committee. Excuse me. Okay. Hang on one second. No, I don't really know. Okay. All right. Fine. All right. We're going to open a work session on the introduction of committee measures, colleagues. And I don't know that. Do they have copies
from Monday?
Oh, you have copies from Monday. This is the automated external defibrillator bill that we took various ideas in different bills and put them together for one sort of master committee bill. There was a concern about some of the people who were proposing initial bills that won't be listed on, as their names wouldn't be listed on this bill. We're going to have that one individual carry the bill, and we're going to make sure that all constituents, if they so desire, can appear on at the request of line. So, without any objection.
Can you do that without making a priority vote? Can you list names on a committee
bill? Yeah, we just have a greenback, just like any other bill.
And
I understood that on a committee bill you couldn't list names.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there's a place on the greenback that says sponsored by, that's where we go. And then you can say at the request of. And that's where you have the option.
Gotcha. Okay.
And you can put in there, but they won't show up in the same format as members.
I think that's perfectly appropriate.
But, okay. All right. Thank you. Is there any objection to the introduction of this committee measure? With no objection?
Excuse me? You don't want to do nothing.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, we just did move to introduce this legislative concept number 3623 as a committee bill, and without objection, LC 3623 is ordered introduced. With no other business coming before the committee, we're adjourned.
Good job.
Thank you. Quickly.